courts declaring the legislature illegitimate?
Well, there is a fight over that because there are several legislators for which, you know, who the courts have and the Supreme Court has determined are not legitimately seated there. So that's a fight, and they have to resolve that in some way.
Well, we want to thank you, Mark, and we're going to have you back next week to have a debate on Venezuela. Thanks so much for being with us, Mark Weisbrot. Well, on Saturday morning, I'll be at the New York Press Club's 2016 Journalism Conference at 9 a.m. at the NYU Kimmel Center. Check our website for more information. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Sharina Nadura, and Andre Lewis. Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Paul Huckabee, our engineer. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford College. We're live with our public affairs show for this week, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. Thank you for tuning us in today. My name is Jay Koronik. I'm station advisor here at WHFR-FM, and my co-host for the new WHFR Journal, Making Waves, is John Conroy. Welcome to back to the studio again, John.
Thank you, Jay. It's good
okay.
to be here.
Okay, I turned on our guest mic, but you're on the other one, so... Let's hear you again, John.
Okay.
No.
How's that, Jay? No?
No. Okay. I don't know if they switched something around. There we go. Wonderful.
That sounds like it works now.
There are so many knobs and buttons in this studio. My goodness. Well, as I always tell my students, do as I say, not as I do. So hopefully they're not listening right now.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for bringing me in.
I'm glad you made it. Apparently, there was a little traffic problem driving up from Grosse Ile today.
Oh, definitely. Right on the Southfield Road, right there at 75.
Oh, Southfield. Yeah. I hate that. Yeah. Well, 75 is always busy, of course. Yeah. Well, let us not delay here. It's a very important show today for those that are considering to make an informed ballot vote on November 8th, which is only a week from next Tuesday, folks. It's coming quick. Not quick enough for some people, I know. But our special guest in the studio today, who will have a full 30 minutes from the time we get started, is Mary Ann Herring. And we want to welcome her to the WHFR Journal.
I'm glad to be able to speak to your audience today, Jay and John.
Mary Ann Herring, this is your first time, I think, in the studio. And by the way, I think, is that your water? Yes, but you get another one from us, too. So if you... get thirsty, just take a break there. That's fine. But Mary Ann Herring is a candidate for the State Board of Education, and that's a very important position in the state of Michigan. Even though it has less power as a board, I have to say at the outset, than some other boards of education in other states. Nonetheless, it is an important platform for ideas. And in fact, right now, our own former superintendent of public schools in Dearborn, Brian Winston, happens to be the state superintendent of education, and he was appointed by these members of the State Board of Ed about a year and a half ago, I think. Mary Ann Herring is a member of the Working Class Party, and so that may be a political affiliation that you are not familiar with, so we're going to give her a little a special time in the middle of her 30 minutes to talk about that political party, too. So, Mary Ann, let's just begin with your background, however you want to phrase that, maybe just a couple minutes, your education, employment history, family, if you think it's relevant.
Yes. My education is, I have degrees in psychology from my formal education, I mm-hmm. should say, from Michigan State, finally graduate school, University of Illinois for undergraduate school. Mm-hmm. But I would also say that I've been schooled in the working class movement as an organizer with a workers' organization for over 40 years in Detroit. And I would say that's really where I've gotten a tremendous education in life experience and understanding the way the society runs.
So were your parents members of unions?
Oh, absolutely not. My father ran against the Farmer Labor Party as a Republican back in the 30s. He was a state legislator. Mm. Later on, because of the Vietnam War, he became a Democrat. My mother was a lifelong Democrat. Mm. I'm a child of the 60s, so I started, I call it taking the cataracts are removed from my eyelids around 1968. And when I've been campaigning, I've said to people, you know, I haven't had confidence in the mainstream political parties, never Republicans, but not the Democratic Party since about 1972. And I think it's very necessary for there to be political alternatives, choices for people at the ballot that are beyond the mainstream parties.
I hear it either way around. Most often with the candidates in answering that question, it's because their parents were of a certain party and they weren't really clear why, but they're just the same as their parents, so they kept the same party. I think an active critical decision on that is very important, folks, in life, because you are yourself and you have a unique experience and you need to make your own decisions on even things as important as, in my humble opinion, and of course all opinions on the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College. I beat John to it this time. But the other way around is that they grow up the opposite of their parents because they're reacting against their parents, as many kids do. They just sort of reject everything that their parents stood for, or a lot of things, just because that's one way to find your independence too, I guess. Well, you know, thank you for that response. I should say that you have been is it full disclosure, conflict of interest? I don't think so, but you have been an adjunct faculty member here at Henry Ford College for decades.
Yes, as far as my employment, you asked me this mm-hmm. in the questionnaire.
Yep.
I'm a woman, and I come from a middle-class family that had seven kids, so we always had to work. So I've had every job in the book when I was growing up, from babysitting to ironing to cashier at a grocery store to ward clerk, or whatever they call it now, at the hospitals, where I worked all different shifts. Mm. When I completed graduate school, I've been a college teacher since 1973, primarily as an adjunct everywhere from Lansing Community College, Wayne County Community College, Davenport University, University of Michigan at Dearborn, and I'm probably forgetting one, but I've been at Henry Ford since 1975. Many businessmen today in Dearborn were my students in the 1970s. I have people's grandchildren in my classroom today.
and your subject area is sociology, right?
Oh, no. I wish they'd let me teach sociology. My background is psychology, heavy on child development and community mental health.
Right. Okay. Well, and so, folks, that's not why we invited her on. She is a local person, and she is running for office, and she's not an incumbent. Those are our criteria for this little show here. So why are you running? Let's start back with the political party question, and we'll come back to why you decided to run for this office. Again, I mentioned earlier, you're actually a member of the Working Class Party, which is brand new here in Michigan, and you helped to create it and get three people, including yourself, on the ballot this first time, which I think is a major achievement in our system. At least, despite criticisms of it being rigged, at least it shows part of it, with a lot of effort, can still respond to people, average people, who want to become part of it and make a difference. So tell us about the Working Class Party.
I'll tell you a little bit of the history. A couple of years ago, five people, including myself, decided to put ourselves forward as candidates with a working class platform. Our program was called For a Working Class Fight for a Working Class Policy. We ran as independents. There were two auto workers, one from the Rouge plant, who's been an organizer against the two-tier jobs that have been introduced into the workplace for the last, since 2007 in auto in the UAW. Another is a well-known militant of Chrysler. He was a retiree, active in, also in the Black movement, Sam Johnson. And we ran myself and another teacher from Henry Ford for Dearborn School Board. Mm-hmm. The auto workers ran for Congress, and we ran an overworked, underpaid City of Detroit worker for a school board position. From the response we got, because I got about 20% of the vote in Dearborn with no formal endorsements, no money, 100% grassroots, so we thought that was pretty good.
Yeah.
I was going to add damn good. And at the same time, our overall candidates got about 17,000 votes, which is also important considering we were running as just by our names, not by an organization. Mm-hmm. Because of that, we decided to do the work to try to get a third party, working class party. Not, we don't call it independent, we call it dependent on the working class as okay. a way to understand that we really, really consciously view that the policies of existing political parties serve certain classes but not the working class, and we wanted the working class to be able to express itself politically. We're addressing those people today who are fed up politically with the lack of choices and who want to see something different and want to say what they think at the polls, to vote for something they stand for. And throughout this campaign, we have heard the issues time and time again. Jobs, overworked, underpaid, attacks on pensions, no increase in Social Security, potholes. Of course, with my position, we have a huge, huge issue that has come up over and over again throughout the different districts where we've campaigned, is the horrific attacks on public education, where parents are being nickeled and dimed, classrooms are overcrowded, there are not enough supplies, classes get cut when you want your senior in high school to be able to take an AP physics class, and there is none to take. No art classes in some of the Taylor public schools. I could go on and on as to what the different issues that were raised, but we think a working class platform, as represented by a working class party, is very, very necessary as a political choice for people.
Okay, how do you define working class? It seems that there's a working class and a non-working class at the outset from your discussion, but I mean, is it a certain economic level? When you say working class, I'm just guessing you're not excluding the people still looking for jobs.
Oh, no, not at all.
Okay.
Yes, that's an important question, because even while we were petitioning, some people would say, I'm unemployed, so I'm not working class. And I'd say, no, anyone who does the work, whether or not they have a job, whether or not they're on disability because they're no longer able to work, veterans coming back who are trying to find work but aren't able to. When we say that it's ordinary human beings who really produce everything or service everything, whether we are teachers, whether we are food service workers, whether we are custodians, whether we are auto workers, that's what we mean by working class, to distinguish from really upper class positions.
So in a way, some of the definitions that have come up, at least by Bernie Sanders, about populism, that you would say you're a populist, which is like the 99% or maybe 98% or whatever. Is that how you'd see, I mean, how would you relate to that term of populist?
Well, that term is an historical term, mm-hmm. and it embraces different social classes. And I would say that I would still stick with the working class label overtly. And I will quote a number of people who talked to us during our campaign. They would grab the clipboards from us and say, working class party, that's me. Where do I sign? Because you can say populist, but when you say people, that can embrace many, many layers of the population. The Bill Gates is a person. Donald Trump is a person.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about the people who do the work or would like to do the work to make the society run.
Yeah, it's not a debate on this point, but mm-hmm. I feature most Fridays, and I might today too, commentaries by Jim Hightower, who's known as a populist, nationally known figure out of
yes.
out of Texas.
Yes.
And I think he would say is that the when the populism he's talking about is really the people, as you were saying, the people that need the services and that they're working hard. They don't have any special advantages, but they're certainly the majority of our population.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And well, let me bring up just as an aside. I'm sure you're going to say more when we get into issues that might involve the State Board of Ed too. I have a long list, but I don't know if we'll get to all of them. We didn't last time. I had one other candidate on the show a couple weeks ago, and we didn't get to many of them. But I don't allow on this show. One of our rules, as John knows, is that I tell the candidates before the interview that they can't say anything negative, denigrate in any way, much less name call any other candidates, whether for the same office or other ones. Just talk about yourself and your policies and what you think you can change and what you want to try to change. So I had a candidate for 12th District. You're not running for the 12th District, but one of the other working class party members are in that campaign. Is it Gary?
Gary Walkowitz, yes, right. 12th District.
And the libertarian that I was talking to at the time very quickly said he's just a communist. And we left it at that. I didn't get back to it. So how would you respond to that that label? Is the working class party in any way communist?
In the sense of the working class movement of this country historically, the answer is absolutely yes. Hmm. Look at the word. Commune is the beginning of the word. Collective. If you look at the working class movement of this country in the 1930s, it was a communist movement in the sense the little c, little mm-hmm. c,
yes.
as opposed to capitalist movement.
Right.
And when you look at who the major organizers of the union, of the working class movement at that time, the left was strong and resonated in the population, in the working class in this country in the 1930s and earlier. We live in a society which had a huge repression against unions, against working class organizations in this country after World War II, called the McCarthy period, that left a bad taste in the mouth of people who oftentimes can get afraid of a word. I'm not afraid of a word. I'm for the working class, and the working class organized together collectively, communally, is what I place my confidence in. So if he thought he was denigrating us, he is sadly mistaken, because I thank you.
Right. Okay. Well, no, I wanted to clarify that, because there is, as you said, a bad connotation, a negative connotation in this country.
Other countries.
Right. And in fact, if I remember my only one class of political science in college, that small c communism, again, some of the philosophies of Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels and others in the middle of the 19th century suggested that communism was kind of utopian, an ideal state where government would wither away after a period of education, where people would understand why they don't need government. Now, there's only been very small examples of usually non-Western societies where that's ever happened, and it's small groups of people, almost tribal groups, not part of Western civilization, where that's happened. And he talked about maybe that transition period would be called a dictatorship of the proletariat. Well, just an excuse for dictators. I think today, in my opinion, is that Russia and even China, which are considered by most people to be communist countries, that they're just dictatorships, really. That there's very few freedoms for people, and there's no clear plan that in any time soon their government's going to wither away. I don't think Putin would let that happen, you know. So there's a real difference between some communist rulers who call themselves communists today, and I think what you're talking about, which is some of the original ideas of communism, small c, of working together without coercion. Is that the right word,
well,
maybe?
Or? I would say we're getting sort of away from ourselves,
yes,
a
yes,
little bit, because
right.
or quite a bit, because we're talking about a new political party on the ballot in
right.
Michigan
and
to be able to
okay.
workers to express what they think.
So you call yourself, though, socialist.
Yes.
And I think that's probably better, because that's a working term that people can relate to. There's many countries of the world that are largely socialist. We have a lot of socialist programs in America that are working well. They might need to be tweaked a little bit, but we are certainly a country that has applied socialist principles, and those principles have worked out along with democracy. So democratic socialism or socialist democracy, we're a combination of those things. But socialism is a working system, if I remember political science correctly, in many countries of the world. And so go ahead then on that.
Well, Jay, you mentioned it. You took one political science class. I hate to tell you this. Okay, a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing.
That's right. That's right. Imagine people who didn't even take that one class.
Oh, I don't know. They might have been better off.
Well, maybe. Okay.
But I would call them socialist economic principles. For example, Medicare, unemployment insurance, workers' compensation, you know, public education. And it's like, I think that, again, back to the issue of a word, ordinary people want to have decent schools for themselves. The elders of the society, Medicare is a really important program for them. Medicaid's an important program. Unemployment insurance is an important program. But I don't think the vast majority of people in this country use these words, socialist and communist.
No.
They say, I need something for my children. I need something for my health care. And I pay taxes, and that tax money should go for what we need. I think that's the real issue.
Yes, I've got a question for you, Marianne. When you're a member of the State Board of Education, how will you change the perception of what is now called specials in the school system, meaning art, gym, and music? How can you change the perception in state and local school districts?
Well, I would say the issue is not to change the perception. I think the real issue is all those programs should exist in every single public school in the state of Michigan, yet they do not. So-called specials are exactly what it is that human beings need to thrive intellectually, cognitively, culturally. And when you say there are certain school districts where there isn't art or there isn't music, for example, or the programs have been cut so parents have to pay extra, that is, to me, the problem, because I think when you talk about anything to do with public education, we should be talking about not adequate education, we should be talking about excellent education. And we know there are public schools which are excellent in some districts, so we know there could be excellent schools with the, if you want to call it specials, I'd say what's absolutely necessary for every child.
Okay.
Yes, and those special, I mean, I don't even like using the term myself, but as it is now, the kids come in early in the morning before classes even start, or stay after school, and the teachers are taking care of those programs then. Mm-hmm. Another question I had is, Ford and GM recently made record company profits. And do you think the profit sharing is a fair system, the way it's been going on with the workers?
So you're making a...
John, I'll just explain. John is from a GM background.
That's
why he's concerned about that.
Okay, so I'm doing a leap from it should be, you know who should be answering this is Gary Walkowicz or Sam Johnson, but I can very readily answer this question as well, because we work together in this campaign. The word profit sharing is an oxymoron or whatever it is. Profits are really not shared as they should be. And first of all, I believe workers in auto should make a very good high wage for all the work that they do with benefits. But when profit sharing was introduced as sort of the carrot on the end of the stick, that in good times when the companies were prospering, workers would get more, because in the bad times they say that we are not able to afford. I don't accept that premise. If you look at the huge amounts of profit that have been made historically by those those companies. Sure, they had years they didn't make the profits that they wanted. But at the same time, when you look at the accumulation of the profits made from your father's labor, Gary and Sam's labor, and all of the people out there, whoever you are, it's chances are you've got, if it's not you, you've got relatives, friends, grandparents, parents who worked in auto because this is an auto-dominated area. If I think people have the right to have a decent high wage and benefits, and that profit sharing in the years where the company can say, oh, we had to recall the tires, we're not making as many profits. Oh, we had to make capital investment over here, we're not making as much profit, then that is used as the way to give workers less.
I want to reintroduce our guest, the political candidate Mary Ann Herring, and she is running for the State Board of Education here in Michigan. She's on the ballot with the Working Class Party, and we're about halfway through that 30-minute claim for fame here at WHFR.FM, the station making waves. But why are you running for this office? As I discovered a couple weeks ago when I interviewed another candidate for this office, and I did a little research, I couldn't believe this, but there's no regular pay for people that get elected to the State Board of Ed. It's something like $100 per diem with a limit of 30 per year, which means $3,000, basically sort of gas money to drive from Detroit to Lansing. And as I said, the State Board of Ed doesn't have an awful lot of power to actually make things happen. Because, of course, in general elections, most of the state votes Democratic, and so there's usually more Democrats on that than Republicans. And, of course, our legislature and our governor are Republicans. So there's usually a big difference between what's proposed from the State Board of Ed and what actually gets enacted. In fact, sometimes, and I think it's ending now, the EAA, the Education Authority, whatever, that was a plan, as I saw it, by the legislature and the governor to get around the State Board of Ed, to do something with charter schools and the schools setting up the emergency financial manager for school districts. That was a move that really went around.
Started under Granholm.
State Board of Ed. Yeah, but she had some trouble, I remember, with one of the superintendents who was supposedly a Democrat, and it took her about a year and a half to finally get him off that board. But so he wasn't in line with her program, even though theoretically they're both Democrats. But right now we have Brian Whiston there. So
yes.
Tell us about how you see, and again, it's wonderful that anyone wants to run for this and take the trouble to be on the board, but how do you see that all working? What do you see the potential for the State Board of Education?
Okay. First of all, I've said already that I've been a lifelong teacher. Many people who work in human service fields, you will talk to them and you will see that they are never in those jobs because they think they're going to make money. Their concern is that human
Very
beings
true.
Have health care,
That's right.
they have elder care, there are good, there are, the kids get taught, whatever, all the, whether it's teaching, hospitals, nursing, you name it. So to say that my reward would be money, that's foreign to me. I really don't understand. I mean, it's not what drives me. What drives me is human beings, essentially. And I see that we live in a society which is very violent towards children. I teach child development. I teach cognitive development. Scientifically, historically, we know what it takes for every child to be a budding scientist, to be an artist, to be an athlete, to be an intellectual. Yet from a very, very early age, children are thwarted, which is a nice way of saying held back, destroyed, their curiosity, their energy. When they do not have access to educational experience that really addresses who they are. And I'm running for State Board of Education to give voice to the children, and young adults who are obviously going on in school, to parents, to teachers, to parapros, to custodians, to food service workers, to all those layers of support staff in the schools who are vital, working with the children every day. We have seen all the attacks, all the budget cuts, all the policies that have said, on the one hand, this is what children need, and on the other hand, not giving the resources for those programs to be operationalized, unfortunately, but cutting programs so that parents have to work much, much harder. Teachers have to work much harder. We talked to so many teachers on the campaign trail, many of whom felt driven out of the schools because they couldn't take it anymore, what was being done to them, to the kids, to the parents. And I think this candidacy is a way to raise something different, to say enough is enough. We're running to give voice to all those people, from parents to parapros to teachers, that we are not accepting any more budget cuts. The money is there. The state has the money. And that's back to the, we can go back to Big Three if you want to talk about where the money is.
Okay. John, go ahead.
Well, what you were saying there also brings to mind special education. When they mainstream special education, are you in favor of that, or would you rather have it as a separate program?
You know, I think it's a tricky question. Yep. Because, first of all, again, I'm thinking of all the parents we've met over time. The issue is, what's going on in classrooms? If you mainstream children who need additional resources, when the personnel, when the staff is not there, when the resources are not there, of course mainstreaming doesn't work. But mainstreaming doesn't work for ordinary children who do not have brain damage, who do not have special needs, no matter what their what the challenge is that they have, if you don't have the resources in the classroom itself. And I, again, on the campaign trail, we've talked to people, and they say, I just talked to a woman from Birmingham with her child, and she asked me to come to the Lansing demonstration because they're proposing online instruction for special needs kids. And it's like, who's coming up with this?
Yeah.
You know, no one having to do really with education, with really deeply understanding what children need, would come up with such a crazy plan.
We've lost the personal touch, which is, to me, so important to have with each kid,
no matter who they are.
And, you know, the loss of the nuclear family as well, being a huge problem.
Yeah. And we call them kids with a lot of love, let me say that.
Yeah.
Certainly, well, it just as an example, testing or student achievement. Brian Winston, last week, he had an initiative that he proposed to the current State Board of Ed to actually reduce the number of times that the Michigan State Standardized Test, called MSTEP right now, which is relatively new, he says it should now just be given, or in the future, just given once in elementary school and once in middle school. And he also says, and this really makes sense to me as a teacher, that a test would be given once at the beginning of each school year. This is when the MSTEP is not given, and then once at the end. So you can see the change, and that's interesting because, you know, entry-level testing and exit testing has real value, and many teachers do that just to, I mean, when I began here in English, we started with a writing sample to see what their writing was like coming into the class, whether or not they were placed in the correct class also, since we have many different levels of English composition, and we try to make sure people are getting in the level that's appropriate for them so they can achieve and not just be frustrated right from the beginning anyway. But the board has questioned whether it's wise to change assessments considering the NSTEP was just implemented in 2015. And they think it would be very confusing because they changed tests so many times. And I don't know, Kathleen Strauss said that, whether she was a Republican or a Democrat, but how do you feel about testing or achievement-based programs in K-12?
I don't know where to begin. Let me just put it this way.
It's a big issue.
We live now where education is based on teaching to test, or testing to teach, or whatever that is that they call it, rather than teaching to think, teaching to thrive intellectually and culturally. And so if you were to ask me, is Brian Winston's, do I prefer his over the board's? I would say it's not the real issue. If I had to pick between the two, of course, you know, right, the beginning of the year and the end of the year is a heck of a lot better than constant testing, which totally jeopardizes the whole classroom situation for teachers and for students. Again, I teach psychology. I know something about the history of testing, whether it was the Educational Testing Service, which was a profit-making corporation, which imposed horrifically racist and anti-working class tests known as those standardized IQ tests, or whether today, where corporations are making getting huge contracts in every state to impose testing. I think the issue is, what is going on in the classroom? Because you cannot talk about kids being tested if they're not being taught.
Let me jump to just another quick question. We've got about 5 minutes left in our time today with Marianne Herring, candidate for State Board of Ed in Michigan here, working class party affiliation. Charter schools. There's a topic for you. Pro or con, they seemed, our legislature seems to believe they're a valid alternative and should be, apparently have been supported and endorsed by the governor even. In Detroit, for example, that everybody knows has a failing public school system. Are charter schools an answer to some of the problems with public schools today? What do you think?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I believe the issue is that we should be providing the resources so that every district is well-funded enough for teachers, for parents, for students, so that we wouldn't have low-performing schools. But it goes back to that profit-sharing question. When you live in a society, in a metropolitan area, which was economically gutted by the policies of the big three. I've been here 45 years. I have watched neighborhoods go to hell in a handbasket because people used to have jobs at Cadillac, at Fleetwood, at Verner's, at Huber Foundry, at Lynch Road, at all the big factories that used to exist. They don't exist anymore. The people who are working do more work, and people are out there without decent jobs. That affects the tax base, that affects the standard, the quality of life for parents and their kids. And at the same time, then when the emergency managers gutted Detroit Public Schools, and subsequently now those schools are in debt, now those schools don't have the resources, so voila, now those schools are low-performing schools, and so let's chase, have our kids be chased around to a different district with a school which is in even less performing, but somebody's making a profit, taking public money, and it's going with the student to that charter school. I'm completely against that.
That's pretty clearly stated. Thank you. Right. Well, we have just a couple minutes. We want to give you, and it's probably impossible, but a 1 minute summation. But before that, can you give us more information about you and your campaign? Maybe a website address. One that I've found here is workingclassfight.com. And that would cover you and, of course, the two other candidates, Sam Johnson for U.S. Congress District 13 and Gary Wolkowitz, U.S. Congress District 12. Is there other ways they can get information?
Our website is a pretty good website. You can see speeches, you see our program, you can hear radio interviews, you can see videotapes. And the only other way is you have to know somebody who's active in the Working Class Party, and that would be at Secretary of State's offices, it would be at schools, it would be at Eastern Market, it would be at Farm Market in Ann Arbor, wherever we really are on the beating the pavement with this campaign.
I tried to schedule your interview a couple weeks ago, and that afternoon I placed a call. You were out at an auto factory greeting workers while they were changing shifts, so
yes,
you were busy.
Yes, and I had come before that from Taylor Secretary of State's office, which is a great place to campaign. 99% working class.
Right, very busy in that.
Taylor Board of Education place is not a bad spot either.
Okay. Well, if there were more of us, we would cover more places.
Okay. Well, I hope your message, as I wish to all the candidates, that your message gets out. Again, Working Class Party is new. It was the initiative that Marianne Herring and others, about 70 other people, helped getting petitions to get them on the ballot. And they have very strong opinions and views that are not the same as some of the other candidates. And they are right up there. They are adequately displayed and identified. They answered their questionnaires in the vote411.org website, and also the League of Women Voters Dearborn Heights guides that are circulating around, physical copies at various places in Dearborn, like at Dearborn Administrative Center and elsewhere, also even at the City Clerk's office in Dearborn. They have copies of those guides, and it's amazing that you can see all the candidates, you see their response to 3 to 5 questions on issues, and they're equally shown there. I wish that could be the case with advertising for all the candidates to be equal, and debates to have everyone have equal time if there were any. So we really appreciate having you on. But can you sum up in 1 minute? This is a challenge for her. Marianne, go ahead. Why should people vote for you for Michigan State Board of Ed?
To allow there to be a voice on the board that speaks for parents, teachers, parapros, custodians, bus drivers, adjunct professors, who are the backbone of the teaching staff of all major universities and colleges, to be able to say there is money, there is plenty of money in the state of Michigan. It just isn't going to the schools. Somebody said, where's the lottery money? I say it's going in one pocket and the money is coming out of the general fund in the other pocket. We have to organize. Now, vote for me for Working Class Party will not solve the problem. We say people have to organize. Working class people and poor people in the past had to fight to get their children to have the right to public education. We have to have a fight again for the right to restore quality, excellent education. It's a vote for yourselves by voting for the Working Class Party. It's a way to plant the flag that the working class needs its own political voice. And in the words of Eugene V. Debs, I'd rather vote for something I want and not get it, then vote for something I don't want and get it. And vote for something you want this year. Vote for me for State Board, Gary Walkowitz, District 12, Sam Johnson, District 13. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes. Marianne Herring, for being here. A very spirited display of opinions and a lot of great ideas. Obviously, very biased as a teacher myself, and my daughter's a teacher in Southfield. If people have been listening to my show at all regularly, they hear all the horror stories of being a science teacher in the 7th grade these days, at least in Southfield anyway. So we have some opinions here. Here's Jim Hightower and also an opinion from Jack Lessenberry. We'll be back with more local stories about all the upcoming politics and the stories approaching the big election here on the new WHFR Journal today. So take a close listen to Hightower and Lessenberry, and we'll be back after that.
The best political party in America is not the Dems or the Repubs, but a real party named Fighting Bobfest. It's a day-long outdoor political festival run by a coalition of Wisconsin progressives who believe in putting the party back in politics. Held in Madison every September, Bobfest not only features Give 'em Hell speechifying and hot populist issues, but also a dozen terrific food trucks, kegs of great local beers, lively music, activist booths, games, political humor, and, well, fun. The idea is to have a political event that people actually want to come to. Admission is free, but Bobfest is also corporate free, rejecting any funding or ads by corporate interests. It's a volunteer-run festival of, by, and for regular people. And it pays for itself each year by passing the bucket and getting staff support from The Progressive, the feisty, populist-spirited magazine founded 107 years ago by Senator Robert Fighting Bob La Follette. Yes, Fighting Bob Fest is named for La Follette, a truly great U.S. senator who was renowned for battling the corporate corruption of American politics. In fact, when he was Wisconsin's governor a century ago, La Follette passed a law banning corporations from making donations to political candidates, a law that is still in effect. This is Jim Hightower saying, however, corporate interests today use front groups in a political ploy to bypass such bans and dump millions of dollars into their chosen candidates, including Wisconsin's current governor. They're mocking the law and the people. That's the importance of bringing us Mach-E's together. In big events like Bobfest, where 10,000 Wisconsinites gathered this year in the fighting spirit of La Follette, determined to stop the corporate governor's cynical end run. To learn more about Fighting Bobfest, go to www.fightingbobfest.org.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
I'm Jack Lessenberry. There was a great fascination with Tom Hayden when I was in high school in the Detroit suburbs in the mid-1960s, mostly on the part of the teachers, that is. They regarded him as a boy gone wrong who'd grown up in what was then sleepy suburban Royal Oak and then became a radical enemy of America. Some of them knew his mother, who was a film librarian for the public schools. They felt sorry for her and didn't ask about her son. After all they told us, he'd started SDS, Students for a Democratic Society, which they thought was worse than communism. Why, it was against the Vietnam War. Hayden himself had gone to North Vietnam to give aid and comfort to the enemy long before it was cool to do so. To the extent we students thought about it at all, it was that it was pretty amazing that somebody from around here had become infamous. As time went on and we got closer to graduation, being against the Vietnam War didn't seem so bad. What we hadn't known is that Hayden had been a hero of the civil rights movement. He'd been beaten and thrown in jail in both Mississippi and Georgia in 1961 and could easily have been killed. Long afterwards, he wrote in his memoir, Reunion, that, "To those who did not pass through the Southern civil rights experience, willfully going to jail may seem like a career-threatening act of despair. It was not. It was both a necessary moral act and a rite of passage." Millie Jeffrey, a pioneer in the labor movement, gave me that book years later. Her daughter Sharon and Hayden were close friends, and Millie had arranged for them to use a retreat where he wrote the Port Huron Statement, SDS's manifesto. Its opening words could have been uttered by millions of far less radical students. "We are people of this generation, bred in at least modest comfort, housed now in universities, looking uncomfortably to the world we inherit." I only met Hayden a few times, once in Ann Arbor with Jane Fonda, when he was still married to her in the 1980s. Everyone was dazzled by Fonda, of course, and I could see he didn't mind. He was more interested in getting things done. The longest conversation I ever had with him was in a suburban living room, not far from where he'd grown up. This was during the worst period of the Iraq War, and we were talking about reports that some U.S. military recruiters had killed themselves. I asked if it wasn't discouraging to have to fight against one more unjust war after all those years of Vietnam. "Well," he said in so many words, "what else can you do?" He was almost the same age as Bob Dylan, who earlier this month won the Nobel Prize. Had it been Hayden who was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, I wouldn't have been surprised. When I saw the news this morning, the words from a Dylan song popped into my head. "You don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows." Tom Hayden never did, and when it was an ill wind, he did all he could to stop it.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
And you're listening to the new WHFR Journal. I'm Jay Koronek, your host. John Conroy is escorting our guest outside the studio now. We like to be courteous to all of our guests. And we thank Marianne Herring for coming in today. Remember that all of our political interview shows from the last 3 months are available for listening to anytime after broadcast, and that means today's show in 15 minutes. You could listen to it again if you're listening live today on Friday, the 28th of October. You just go to the website, whfr.fm, click on Talk Show button in the middle of the page, Talk Shows, and then click on WHFR Journal. Only two choices there. We're the WHFR Journal on Fridays. And then select the date. And I have added to the titles of the various podcasts, specifically the interviews with political candidates over the last 3 months that are, I think, well, some of them are not still currently in the November 8th election, but they were talking before the primary. So we have interviews with Susan DeBaggia, Gene Hunt running for 19th District Court. We have several people running for the 12th District U.S. Congress, two people, including Marianne Herring today, for the Michigan State Board of Ed. And we've done a lot of stories on the show about the people running for the school board here in Dearborn. There are a lot of candidates running. I think four candidates for 2 6-year terms and two candidates running for a 2-year partial term. So a lot of decisions to be made. All these candidates are talked about, are listed, and interviewed for those that answered the questionnaire for the League of Women Voters Dearborn, Dearborn Heights. So look for around town what's called the 2016 Nonpartisan Voter Guide. The tabloid form, that small newspaper form guide, is full of information that applies to everyone who's voting in the state of Michigan this November 8th. And there's also in Dearborn and maybe in other areas a similar document that talks about things on the ballot that are specific to, and candidates running that are specific to those cities, such as there's one 8.5 by 11 stapled document, I think it's about 10 pages or so, that talks specifically about the vote here in Dearborn and Dearborn Heights and the candidates and proposals. And again, the information is essential, I think. There's few other places where you find recommendations for, not recommendation, but background information on candidates, including nonpartisan candidates. Now, I'd just like to share a couple of opinions here and about recommendations for how to vote that you may not have heard before. From the Press and Guide from 2 days ago, it was posted on their website, a story about We the League of Women Voters urges yes vote on regional transit proposal. Our Tuesday forum this week, just 3 days ago on Tuesday, on the 25th, which you can listen to the podcast of course, if you go to WHFR.fm, click on Talk Shows, choose Tuesday Forum, and click on the most recent podcast, October 25th, and that's when we had the League of Women Voters Dearborn, Dearborn Heights in here for the whole hour, talking about the history of the organization, their activities as a local chapter, and also you know, the nature of their publications and their meetings upcoming. They're doing so much, and a vital organization, I would say the key vital organization for democracy in America, nonprofit organization, of course, nonpartisan too. But they do take positions on proposals on the ballot, and they have chosen to urge a yes vote on regional transit. That's one of the two millage proposals that are on the ballot here in Dearborn and Dearborn Heights. I think Detroit has a couple of ballot proposals that we don't have right now, as well as 63 candidates for their Detroit school board. I don't know how many positions are possible, 8, 10, 12, but 63 candidates. How do you choose there? Oh my gosh. Anyway, so we in Dearborn, Dearborn Heights don't have those issues or problems, but I think just about every major and minor organization and group that I know of is recommending a yes vote on regional transit proposal. Detroit has almost no effective regional transit. I mean, they don't. There's no way for people who don't have cars to in a relatively inexpensive way, get back and forth to a job, for example, or to the store, or to their doctors. And this is a proposal that will go on a long time, 20 years of funding, but you got to start somewhere. And there may not be a lot of changes or increased service for about 5 years after the money starts coming in. And of course, they hope to get state and federal proposals to have even more money, and they need a 20-year project approved to even look good to the federal and state regulators. Now, that money is not certain, but it's probable, I think. There's a good chance, I think, that they may get that, but they need this proposal. This proposal has been in the works by the people that were appointed to the Regional Transit Authority. There was limited money from the state legislature just to get a proposal together. And they've been working for the last 2-3 years since the proposal passed in Lansing and was funded. But that even these people that put the proposal together, and they're put on this board by each county involved, four counties involved, including Washtenaw. And basically the group runs out of money next spring. So they can't even have meetings among themselves. So there won't be any regional transit if this goes down. There won't be any hope for anything that will help the whole area, help unify the area, help the poor in the area, help people to get more jobs, to get to places of shopping, and to get to healthcare. And so we've got to start somewhere, you know, and this is the best answer they've come up with. The only other one I've heard was to take the money instead and to buy everybody a car, which might be doable because of the cost involved. But, I mean, you look at the cost and something like, I think it's close to $40,000 a year for every prisoner we have in prison here in Michigan. That's the cost of maintaining the prisons and the guards and the security and the food and the clothing and so on for the prisoners. What if we just gave each person $40,000? I mean, it sounds crazy, and it wouldn't work, but, you know,
what would they do with that?
Yeah, something wrong there. Yeah. Just like the Guantanamo prisoners. I heard that Operation Guantanamo prison in Cuba, the United States has control of that. $2.5 million a prisoner. Hmm. Now, it obviously doesn't take that much to keep somebody in a little cell, what else could $2.5 million per prisoner pay for in terms of rehabilitation?
How could it be better used?
Yes. Reunification? How could it be better used for maybe other projects? As far as I'm concerned, let them become Cuban citizens if they want to be. I don't know. I'm just saying. Because most of them haven't been found guilty, and they couldn't, even if tried, there wouldn't be any evidence. It's all just the majority are just held there, as I understand, by innuendo and suspicion. And let's get back to local here. So anyway, the regional transit proposal is something endorsed by just about every major and minor group and political group and every nonprofit group and the League of Women Voters. They have a letter to the editor that should be in all the local papers this weekend, next week. Wayne County Education Millage is the right choice for schools. This is a letter to the editor that appeared downriver in the News Herald last week. But also, it is, and I think I mentioned it last week, it's signed by more than a dozen superintendent of local schools. This is the second millage proposal on the ballot after the Regional Transit Authority. It is for Wayne County schools to get more money to the schools since state funding it has been cut so much over the years and has not been fully restored by the state legislature. And Dearborn would get a pretty good deal, actually. The amount of money we'd be paying in, more money will be coming back just because it's divvied up after collected based on a per student count. However that works out. Just kind of interesting to me, and I do raise the question, Dearborn Superintendent Glenn Malico did not sign this letter from the other dozen or so superintendents. But I am sure, I'm very sure, I haven't asked him, how can I be so sure, that he would endorse this? Because the schools, all the schools, including Dearborn, could use the extra money to get back to where they were about 10 years ago, even. All right. Arab American News. Now, they've updated their endorsements. And I say update, I mean seriously, because in one case, so it's going to be in their, it's on their website right now, arabamericannews.com. And, of course, they're based right here in Dearborn. And the paper is distributed free at major public facilities in Dearborn, usually Friday after 5, I think John said. And
Friday after 5.
Certainly on the weekends.
It's also in the newspaper box at their publishing place.
Right, yep. Well, that's where to go. And they're located on
Chase
Road, north of Michigan?
North of, just right at Ford Road.
Oh, close to Ford Road. Ford Chase Road. At Ford Road, yep. Okay. Yep. And I just wanted to mention that their endorsements for November 8th actually changed because I looked back at a previous printout that had their list. For 19th District Court Judge, they didn't have a recommendation. It said no recommendation. And now maybe that was AIPAC recommendations, which is the Arab American Political Action Committee. They are about the same, but not the same people as the people that run the Arab American News. The Arab American News, in their latest recommendations, and their only recommendations now, is that for 19th District Court Judge, they recommend Jean Hunt. Okay, not Susan DeBodge. Just thought I'd make that clear. I don't know if I mentioned their recommendations a month or two ago, but that could have been AIPAC recommendations where they didn't take sides.
Well, and in this week's edition of the Arab American News, there's a very good Q&A, five questions each for Susan DeBaja and Jean Hunt.
Okay, I didn't see that.
Yep.
Okay, great. So a very interesting back and forth on several questions. And they are the only paper in town also that's done a full profile story, and we featured them on the show as soon as we see them, of the candidates for the Dearborn Board of Education.
Mm-hmm.
That is, each candidate separately. It's not a debate, but it's not a soundbite either. And so it's a nice little, I'd say, 500 to 700 word article about each one of the candidates. And that's really fair and upfront. And those are available on their website. Yep. If you go to ArabAmericanNews.com, you can read those again. For proposals that we just mentioned, if you wanted to know, the Arab American News is yes. They recommend a yes vote for both the Regional Transit Authority and the Wayne County Educational Enhancement Millage. It's going to cost you a little more, folks, but it's all going to go locally. And I think that's the money best spent. A lot of people think, oh, I don't trust government. Federal government never gets things right. I don't believe that, but I'm just saying a lot of people, like Donald Trump, has been part of that effort, and some people in the Libertarian Party, too. But local money is money usually very well spent. There's not much waste because it doesn't go through many hands. Now, whether it's spent exactly correctly on the right things, at least you have some control as a private citizen. You can get involved. You can keep in touch. And you can make input back to your local elected officials as to what you think about what's going on. And changes can be made to get things back on track. If it's money spent further away, like the federal government, there's less chance of having that input. At least it's not very immediate. It's not very direct. I mean, you can do it through your representatives, but again, federal government is a big thing. Okay, let's just see here. I'll just quickly go over things. They do recommend Donald Trump. They do recommend Donald Trump should not get your vote. I almost turned it around there. They have reservations about Hillary Clinton. You know, they did support Bernie Sanders in the primary. They say things not real favorable about Gary Johnson, the Libertarian. And they say they do like the Green Party candidate, Jill Stein. But they think because she's only polling at 3%, she can't win. I just say this about the third-party candidates, including Working Class Party, too, now that we just talked to Mary Herring. If you don't vote for them, they can't win. If you don't vote for them, it won't be a sign that you care for what they care about. Okay, so I don't think it's a wasted vote myself. Yes, I know in a close election between the top two, it could make a difference. I know that, but you have to vote for what you really believe would be the best candidate. But that's my opinion. Everybody's got a different way of voting. And by golly, once you get in that voting booth, this is a democracy still, thank goodness, and you can choose whichever way you want to go.
No matter what, exercise your right, no matter what.
Yep, yep. It's all the time we have now. But, oh boy, Kitty Love is going to be with you with Highway 61, the best in the blues, starting in just a few moments. And she's going to be covering for Mike Holloway. So you can go with the flow with Kitty Love today from 4 to 6 also. So, oh, I can't believe it. 4 hours of the best in blues, and Kitty Love will be your host. So thank you for listening to the new WHFR Journal. Tune in again next week. Just the last show before the election. Oh, it's getting exciting, or it's getting ultimately frustrating. I don't know. Take your pick there. But thank you for being with me, John.
You're welcome, Jay, and happy Halloween.
Oh, my goodness. I forgot that. I'm scared already. Okay, here's Highway 61. It's WHFR Dearborn.